Church of Mavis. We're your hosts, Jeffrey Pritchett and Guy Weddle. And tonight we both feel like a bum's ball sack, but we're going to continue the show because that's how we roll. My neck is, I woke up early a few days ago with the worst neck pain ever. I felt like somebody tried to hang me in my sleep. Someone jokingly said I was abducted and they let my head hang off the table. If that's true, I don't remember it, but my neck is totally screwed up for no reason. I slept on it wrong. But it's doing a little bit better today. I got some cheap Arctic Ice stuff from the dollar store, and I've been taking some ibuprofen. And tomorrow I'm going to see Paul, the alien movie with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost from the, you know, Shaun of the Dead and all that, and my mom's going to give me some Percocet for my neck, so hey, I'll be good tomorrow. Get to see my daughter.
Did that come out this weekend, Paul?
You know,
are you stealing it again?
I don't believe in stealing stuff. I would
whatever, dude.
I don't know. I think it is. It's out in the UK, but it is out on torrents. There's a good copy on torrents. But I think it came out in the UK in February, and then it comes here in March. But it's getting good reviews. I'm definitely excited to see it. And it's rated R, so that's really good. An alien movie. It's like Satanic E.T. But basically, our guest tonight got a few things to talk about. Not much, but mostly some guests that are coming up in the next few weeks. Tonight's guest is John W. Ratcliffe, Nutter Butter News. He's our special Nutter Butter News investigator, bringing you the news from the scene of ufology and possibly other subjects. We're going to talk about several people in the field, and he has perspectives on them that need to be voiced, and we're going to talk about them. We'll start up with that in a few, but first off, I just wanted to make a couple announcements. We have two big, nice guests coming up the next few weeks. Well, actually, we got a pretty bunch of big guests coming up, like March and April. Ned Bishop in Space Brother, Where Art Thou? And we'll be talking to him about his book, Project Beta, and just going to bring him to the show, get to know him, let the audience know him. Many of you probably already do know him. Many may not. But basically, we're going to, you know, I basically let him know we're going to, you know, make him a friend of the show. So we're going to talk to Greg Bishop next Saturday. And then the next week is Nick Redfern, and he promises that he will be here. And I've named that show... Wait, what is that name? And I always mess it up. Oh, I am Legion, we are many. After the Bible, the creepy demon thing, you know, the pig and Jesus. Because he's going to talk about Final Events, which is basically about the government think tank who investigated the possibility of UFO phenomenon and religious end times, the Collins elite, which we were originally supposed to interview Nick Redfern when his book first came out, like last year, but we had to reschedule a lot because of some pretty good reasons on his side. So finally we're going to get him and talk about that, and hopefully from a different perspective. And plus, you know, the whole Doomsday thing, we love that, so that goes great with the theme of the show, the whole Mavis boo-ha-ha situation. And then Tessa Dick, Philip K. Dick's, is coming to talk to us about Philip K. Dick, sci-fi genius writer, and she's going to be with Anthony Peak, which is, he knew Philip well, and they're both going to be together, and we're going to talk about Philip K. Dick. So it's going to be a Philip K. Dick tribute. Then we got Susan Kornacki. There's a bunch of other people. Just check on the site or my wall for updates. In April, I know Skylar Alice Green. I know I messed her name up. She's coming. Guy's best friend, Timothy Beckley, coming.
Yeah.
I asked someone else recently who knows Timothy, and I go, man, when he talks, is it hard to get a word in with him for you two?
Dude, he is the most annoying person on the planet, period. There is no other person more annoying than Timothy Beckley.
He does talk a lot. But, hey, that's one of those shows we can just sit back and let him talk and just relax. But, hey, he came to us for a show, so, hey, that's pretty cool. He's you know, Timothy Beckley, so, hey, we'll do it. All right, solar flares, we survived that this week. That's a good thing. There were some disturbances. Solar flares happened. Everybody went crazy and thought we were going to die like they do all the time, but we didn't. We survived. March 12th, November Hanson's leaving Paranormal Radio Network, and we're going to throw a bon voyage party for her. Bon voyage, don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out. Bon voyage! All right, let's get to our guest. Mr. Ratcliffe, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. How are you doing tonight, John?
I'm doing well. I just finished my fifth beer. I'm on my sixth, so I hope I'm ready to enjoy the interview.
Well, if you would, John, you've been on the show before, and your show did rather well. Tons of listens. It's called So You Want to Play a Game? We talked about your career in gaming. But if you could just briefly let our audience know a little bit about you, so maybe those that didn't hear the show will at least, you know, get to know you a little bit before we start with Nutter Butter News.
Sure. My career is in computer software, and I've been writing computer video games for most of my life, or most of my adult life. I feel old. I'll turn 50 years old this year. And in the game industry, which tends to be a young man's business, I definitely feel very old. And the technology changes at a pace that is just so unbelievably rapid. It's hard for anybody to keep up with. But I still am. And I currently work for NVIDIA Corporation, which makes the graphics chips, the most advanced graphics chips for all of the that support all the video games, and we now make the Tegra chip, which is used in all of the new Android phones and tablets and things. And I still work in the games end of things, and I'm actually working with Sony Online Entertainment right now, helping them add lots of cool technology for a relaunch of their game Planetside, which I was the original lead engineer on that product. So I'm adding all kinds of cool stuff to that. So that's my day job. And I've had a low-level, or an interest in sort of the UFO and paranormal thing for a long time, for a pretty long time, and I've always been an observer of it. I've never seen a UFO. I'm not what they call an experiencer. I just find it sort of intellectually interesting. I think the idea that we don't have everything, which, you know, what people call, I guess, skeptics or these skeptic societies who run around telling everybody we have it all figured out, and if you don't think we have it all figured out, you're an idiot. I having stepped back and looked at that, I think those people are idiots because it's not quite that simple. So I think there are probably some mysteries out there that we haven't yet solved. I don't have any answers, and I find that really interesting that there's probably mysteries out there we haven't figured out yet. And then as you follow along, and it's kind of the topic of discussion tonight, is when you begin to understand there are mysteries out there that we haven't figured out, it attracts a lot of people. A lot of people are attracted to that, and they're attracted to it for a wide variety of reasons, some like me sort of intellectually, but a whole lot of people who for some reason sort of fall down a slippery slope and gradually lose their minds. And I've seen that happen again and again, where people come into this field and, you know, you go, my God, that guy is sharp. He's on the ball. And then like 5 years later, he's freaking nuts. And you're like, what happened to him? And I think that's really interesting. So the sociological aspect of it, of how this affects people and their belief systems. So that's sort of, that's a personal interest. And I guess that's kind of a little bit of background. But I said, never saw a UFO, never saw a ghost, never anything weird happen. But that certain people have, in particular, like Gordon Cooper, Air Force pilots, people who very respectable people who've had these strange experiences, I find that compelling, and that continues to interest me. But no matter how much that might interest me, we seem to get surrounded by people who've, well, let's face it, they've lost their minds, and that's what we can talk about tonight, is what is it about starting out taking an interest in these topics makes people slowly lose their minds and go crazy. And I mean, at a certain point, and you see what it does to people, you become sympathetic for the skeptics, because they're like, at least they're putting a line in the sand and going, I'm not going to fall off that slope. Don't take me to the edge. I don't want to fall off.
Yeah, John, I literally just walk right out on the edge, because the minute you start interacting with all these people, I mean, you immediately want to leave the field and go do something else. And they just rub off on you, man. all the crazy.
Well, what I came to understand is that if you look at two sides of the coin, if you look at the skeptic, and by the way, I am a skeptic. I think that's why I'm being interviewed on the show tonight. Don't get me wrong, I am a skeptic. I think that being a skeptic is something to be proud of. Everybody who isn't skeptical, let's face it, you're not being rational. You should be skeptical of everything. But these skeptics who are like professional skeptics, meaning they're rock solid in their disbelief in everything, you end up being, at the end of the day, sort of sympathetic to them, because they're at least, you know, trying to keep a grasp. But I have watched people like Richard Dolan, who started out as, you know, everybody went on Richard Dolan. I mean, he's such an esteemed historian. And Dr. David Jacobs, he's an esteemed history professor at a major university. And you watch these people, and they go screaming off the edge of the cliff. It's really quite remarkable. But what I found is that the more weirdness that you let enter your life, the more entertaining your life is. So, if we only have this one life to live that we know of, then you might as well stay entertained. That's why you guys are doing a show. That's why people listen to shows like this, because things at the edge are entertaining. People at the edge are entertaining. So, at the end of the day, you guys, I've mentioned this before, but I think as of tonight, I have about 1,000 Facebook friends, And of those 1,000 Facebook friends, maybe 40 of them are actual friends, meaning like people I know and have shook their hands in my life. And the other 950 are people I've never met who have an interest in strange things. And every day I get a really large dose of crazy. And I'm on the pulse of just the global insanity that seems to be engulfing people. And the internet kind of fuels, you know, because like you were mentioning about, you know, a solar flare goes off and immediately there's this ripple of an emotional effect throughout the internet of all these people who start freaking out. It's pretty entertaining to watch.
I've been thinking about actually doing a list each week of all of the things that go through my news feed about all this stuff that's going to kill us. I mean,
yeah,
every week it's like five or six different things. I mean, it's unbelievable. The stuff with the solar flare is just hilarious.
Well, all I can think of is look how many. I don't watch horror movies. I do not personally care for them, but a lot of people do, and they enjoy them. And it's got to be for the same reason people like go to horror movies. They like to scare themselves. What else could it be? These people like to scare themselves. I got news for them. Life is fatal. 100% of every person who's ever been born has died, unless you count Jesus Christ, and I'll give you that guy. But 100% of everyone ever born has died. We all die. So why are you wasting your life being freaked out about basically nonsense? What I try to explain to people is, here's this person, and he's built a nuclear bunker. He's built a fallout shelter. He has filled and stocked his home with earthquake preparedness. He's spent hundreds of thousands of dollars preparing for the end, and he's gone through all this, and he gets in a car wreck going to the grocery store. How disappointing for him! I feel so sad for that guy because he died in such a mundane, natural effect way. Everybody could die. Every single day you go on the freeway, you could die. Why are you wasting? We don't sit around in our homes. If we did that, if we sat around in our homes obsessing about the fact that we might die when we went to the grocery store, you know, who would get in their car? But the chances of you dying going out on the highway are 1,000 times more, a billion times more than a solar flare, than because Edgar Cayce had, you know, a bad burrito and burped. I mean, these people just love to scare themselves. I don't quite get the motivation unless, like I said, it's kind of like the reason people like to watch horror movies. They like to scare themselves.
What do you think about Yellowstone? You think it's going to go, John?
I have no idea. I don't know. I don't care. I mean, if it does, it does. I mean, like I said, I'm
it's not like you can do anything about it. I mean, if it goes, I mean, we're done. So, you know.
I mean, I definitely understand where you're coming from. People are, you know, fanaticize about it, and I'm one of those people. No, I find interesting articles about it, and I put them on my wall on Facebook and see how other people react to it, and then I'm entertained. That's what I do. But the big thing is solar flares, Yellowstone. And there is a lot of compelling weirdness as far as, like, the FEMA camps. And it does seem like our government is setting up on some level for something, maybe ecological, to happen. But I don't know if it's going to happen. But there are some creepy foreshadowing as far as some of the things going on with that a little bit. But no,
maybe one knows. Maybe they're just trying to be prepared. So they don't have another New Orleans, you know what I mean? You know, so they're actually doing their job, and, you know, I think that's actually what it is.
Right. So we all know as fact that there is a chance, mind you, not a certainty, a chance that the New Madrid Fault could have an earthquake of large proportions. I live right along the New Madrid Fault. We get newspaper articles about this every 5-10 years. We know this. We know that there is a chance there could be a major earthquake in along the St. Andreas Fault. We know for a fact that Mount St. Helens is capable of blowing up. These are all things. We also have major. So FEMA's job is preparedness. So when they go and they do their job, which is to be prepared for, God forbid, something horrible, the fact that they're making effort to be prepared isn't proof positive they know some bullshit's gonna, something's going to happen tomorrow. It's that they're being prepared. And if something terrible happened and lo and behold, they had actually done reasonable preparation, we could all pat them on the back and say, hey, you didn't mess up this time. So I just don't see anything suspicious about any of it. They're doing their job, and that certainly sees the status quo as far as I'm concerned. But you know, whether it's, you know, whatever natural catastrophe that might happen or might not happen, as I said, the risk of me dying or you dying in some natural catastrophe is still a fraction, a tiny, tiny fraction of the risk. Every time you, how many times in your life have you been in a car and almost sideswiped someone, almost been run in the ditch, almost lost control of a car? For most of us, I mean, at my age at 50, that's not once, that's not twice. I can name dozens and dozens of times in my life where I had close calls that, I mean, in a car on a freeway, that could have been the end of my life. But if you said, how many times have you almost died from, you know, a meteor hitting an earthquake? Well, the answer is zero so far. So that's how I'm judging relative risk.
Well, the whole FEMA thing and all that stuff is from the truthers and all that stuff. And, you know, I understand where some of them are coming from, but some of them are so obsessed with it, it's nauseating. If I see one more person say, stop Zionism on my wall or near it, I'm going to just throw up on myself.
Dude, they're no different than the fanatics about any other type of fanatic, dude. They are so irritating. It's like, you know, they could be 100% right, and I wouldn't care because alongside me, screaming at me. You know, they're not. You know, they're just. The minute I hear truther and they sheeple and. People are just, they're the worst.
It's nauseating.
they cause so much fear, you know. That's the guy building the bomb shelter, you know, because there's just all this fear permeating through everything, and people just can't, you know, tune it out.
It's a shame. Fear is a really, really, really negative emotion. It doesn't do anything positive in any way. It's something, you know, I try to fight against in my personal life. When people try to manipulate other people through fear, try to motivate them through fear, I mean, none of these are good things. And, you know, our culture, especially the American culture, has been steeped in it for the past, you know, decade, ever since 9/11, but before that, I mean, you know, it's funny to me when I hear a politician gets on the news and he goes, there are terrorists out trying to kill us or whatever. They're trying to ratchet up fear, okay? We felt this. And because I'm older, I remember a time in my lifetime when presidents, meaning a particular president, Ronald Reagan, went on television and he said, we must have Star Wars. Not for if, but when the nuclear war happens. I grew up, I'm old enough, but I remember when the threat of tens of thousands of nuclear warheads ready at a hair trigger were ready to blow up the entire planet. You know, in 1963, it almost happened. Almost happened. I was 2 years old at the time. So for the first two decades of my life, I grew up in a world where on a hair trigger, one misunderstanding, we could have launched 10,000 nuclear missiles at each other. Today, the chances of an all-out nuclear war are probably approaching zero. That means we live in such a monumentally safer world than we did before. But you wouldn't get that sense from the fear-mongering that we hear in our culture. Don't you find that a little interesting?
Dude, they spent the whole 90s, like different think tanks, different right-wing groups coming up with new scenarios, because when the wall fell, you know, the evil empire was gone. You know, I'm 45. I grew up in all that too. You know what I mean? And when that wall fell, all of a sudden we didn't have an enemy anymore. You know what I mean?
Right.
So they're coming up with all these scenarios for like Iraq and like different places and just actually trying to create or demonize someone so we can have an enemy.
Right. And the greatest irony, the greatest punchline to that entire thing is what's happening in the Arab world right now and happened in Egypt in the last 2 weeks. You put these people on television, half of them speak English, they're on Facebook, they just look like anybody you meet in a coffee house. All they want to do is be free, and the right-wingers are freaking out because, oh, God forbid, they want freedom. Have you seen anything from any of the Egyptians or the Arabs who have been peacefully protesting the last 2 weeks that looks scary to you? And what are we trying to prop up dictators who are oppressing them, who we've propped up forever? I see nothing that's happened in the Middle East that's scary, but I bet you your buddies on Facebook and the guys on Fox News are doing everything they can to make what's happening over in the Arab world look like it's something scary. And it's just the opposite. It's something awesome. It's something inspiring. It's those guys, before it's over, they're going to have more freedom than we do. Because that's been the irony of the whole thing, is that we're going, these peaceful protesters are being attacked. And most of those protests, if they had those same protests in the United States, I would not be surprised to see them being oppressed more severely in the U.S. than some of them are being oppressed over there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, Americans are... You know, they're kind of lazy.
But at any rate, I think that the topic of the night is to talk about people in the field that are sort of have lost it, nutter butters, right? So I went to the UFO Watchdog Hall of Fame, and I thought, well, that's where you start, right? If you want to find the nutty people. And I went through there, and there were some names I recognized. There were tons of names I didn't recognize, and relatively few of them are sort of relevant to what we see today. In fact, the crazy that's on the UFO Watchdog Hall of Fame is kind of quaint compared to some of the crazy we see on Facebook. And I know, for example, Jeffrey, are you still friends with Colleen Thomas, or has she unfriended?
She's gone. She's been... I was going to interview her, but I decided not to, and just totally blacklisted her and just got rid of her.
Yeah, I have been able to not upset people, so relatively few people have unfriended me. Probably the most amusing thing that's happened to me is, at this point, this is kind of a social experiment. Basically, every time you log on to Facebook, it suggests friends. And it'll say, well, this person shares 200 of your friends. Well, if they share 200 of my friends, you know, they got to be in the pile. So I just keep adding them. I just keep adding them into the funnel. And, of course, I'm collecting this giant pile of people. And say something, you know, like, oh, you know, crazies, but that's not really the case. They're just people, and we may share mutual interests or whatever, and I collect these people, and every now and then something happens where, as you guys know from talking to me before, I'm a member of the Freemasons. I joined the Freemasons. It's an organization that I enjoy, and it's just part of my social life, and I've had a number of occasions where someone accepts my friend request, and then they find out I'm a Freemason, and they, like, freak out like as if Satan himself just invaded their home. It's really quite hysterical. But as a rule, most people, you know, they stay on my friends list. I don't attack them because there's no value. It will be no benefit for me to go and click on Colleen Thomas and say, you're freaking nuts. You know, what's the point of doing that? You know, it's far too enjoyable to see her posts and see her updates. I mean, that amuses me, that entertains me, so I'm not going to make that go away. And she hasn't been as active lately, but, I mean, when you look at people like Colleen Thomas and you look at people like Andrew Bisaggio, we both know, if we, you know, from interacting with them, there's no speaking to people like that. I mean, you just can't even speak to them. And there's some kind of a, you know, I'm not a psychiatrist. I can't diagnose, but there's something wrong. I mean, there's something clearly wrong with this person. I mean, they have something, something's wrong. Something's, they are so far gone that, you know, I can't really say what's going on there. I would like to say I feel sorry for Colleen and even in a sense feel sorry for Andrew Bisaggio, but what can you say? I mean, it's quite interesting.
Yeah, with Andrew, I realized something was definitely wrong when I had him scheduled for the show and got that email saying he couldn't do the show because he saw the word dildo and batshit crazy on my wall. And that's when I just knew something was definitely out of sorts. And actually, later on, I prank called him and pretended I was him from the future, and it was pretty hilarious. And he got really mad and told a bunch of people about it, and they got mad. And
I think something was wrong when he said he was, you know, going to Mars and stuff in the 70s. That's what I would have, you know,
yeah.
Other than the word dildo.
He said he only talks to children, only children. Kept talking about children over and over. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, one of these days we need to, in fact, I think that Paratopia has started to move into this area, and I think it needs to be taken even further, which is we need to get more of the psychiatric community involved in trying to sort of psychoanalyze. I mean, so, like, you invited me on the show, and that's great, and nice of you, thank you very much, but what would entertain me would be to have an episode called Nutter Butters, and your guest was a clinical psychiatrist who could diagnose these people. That's the show I want to see. I want someone who can actually look at Colleen Thomas and tell us, yes, according to the DSM, she has this psychosis, and I would prescribe the following treatment. I mean, that's the mystery to us, right? We look at these people and we go, whoa. And of course, the punchline to it all is Jeffrey, you know, I mean, your personal experience is that a lot of these people are having, at the core of it, there's something, they've had some experience. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, I'll take the craziest sounding person there is, and I'll grant they probably had something strange or odd happen to them. There's some genesis or some origin, but what is the pathology that takes someone from having something odd or strange happening to them and where they end up? It's how you fall down the rabbit hole and how deeply down you go. And this slide. And again, I cannot escape Richard Dolan because he's the poster boy for rationality and sanity in this whole thing. And if you've gotten his book After Disclosure and actually read it, and it's not just him, he had a co-author, but that is a textbook example of falling down a rabbit hole, because that book, if you read the thing, it just gets crazier and crazier and crazier. I've watched a little bit of his evolution, and I think what's happened is that he's seen enough evidence that there's something, you know, going on here and something going on there, and then he gets some insider, quote-unquote, insider person whispering inside of his ear, and apparently some, I don't know how this leap of logic happens where you go, hey, there's some odd things that happen, to where the next thing you're going, you go, Zachary Sitchin, man, Sudarians. And I mean, it's just like, am I the only person who is aware that Zachary Sitchin he's passed away, God bless his soul, was a freaking nutcase? Am I the only, that's the thing that I mean. I think everyone in this entire area somehow thinks Zachary Sitchin was a world-renowned, respected scholar, and everything he said was the God's honest truth, when in fact he was a nutcase of the highest order. I'm like,
listen, dude, every one of these types of people have thousands and thousands of followers. So you have a Colleen Thomas or whatever, Cal Korf, Aaron McCollum, whatever. They got thousands of people following them and hang on their every word. You know?
And that fuels them, you believe.
So what about Richard Dolan's book is crazy?
So
what about
it's interesting. Have you read it?
No, I can't afford it. It's like $40. Guy has it. Have you read it yet?
No, I haven't read it yet.
I haven't read it.
I can't afford it. I'm too poor to buy that book. That book's like outrageously expensive. I'm too broke.
Well, I got the Kindle edition, so it wasn't as much, but I'm also not poor. But I made myself read it. It was painful, and I just made myself read the whole thing because I was like, I got to get through this. And it's extraordinarily internally contradictory. The premise of the book is disclosure will never happen because the powers that control it don't want to release that power and control. Disclosure will never happen. And then the next sentence is, disclosure is guaranteed to happen. And it's like you just contradicted yourself. And I could only liken it to it's a UFO person's wet dream. Let's say you saw a UFO. You've seen a UFO, right, Jeffrey?
Yes.
But like a freaking flying saucer, not some light in the sky that blinks.
I've seen some pretty weird stuff plenty of times, yes.
Flying saucer, actual flying saucer.
Yes.
To me, that's the litmus test. Light in the sky, sorry, it doesn't interest me. But a flying saucer, that's a pretty hard, cold thing, right? So,
yes.
So, I lost where I was going. So Richard Dolan believes that this stuff is real, and I'm sorry, I kind of lost where I was going with that.
It's the aliens are trying to block your transmission.
Exactly, aliens are blocking my transmission. Sorry,
like
don't mess with my daddy, Richard Dolan. No.
So the book basically says disclosure is never going to happen, but the book's called After Disclosure.
I don't know why I lost my train of thought there, but at any rate, let me try to circle around because there were some points to be made, is that in the book he suggests that people are going to freak out. I'm sorry, I was talking about a wet dream, a fantasy. I'm sorry, now I got my train of thought back. Okay, so you've seen a UFO, and I have not, all right? But you've seen one. You know they're real, damn it. You know UFOs are real. And around you are all these people telling you that UFOs aren't real. And doggone it, you just want to say, I told you so. You want that vindication. What does every UFO believer, and I don't mean UFO believer in a bad way, you can be a UFO believer because a UFO, but what you want, what you strive for, what fills you is vindication. You want to say, I told you so. You want every single person who said UFOs are bullcrap to have to eat crow. You want all of them. That is a wet dream. That is the ultimate fantasy. Do you get where I'm coming from?
Exactly, yeah.
It's a driving force, I mean a visceral, deep, driving impulse is vindication, validation. Now, I've never seen a UFO, so I have no real vested interest in the whole thing. But for somebody who saw a UFO, to the core of their being, they want vindication. They want the press to eat crow. They want the scientific community to eat crow. They want that so bad. That's what Richard Dolan's book is. It is a fantasy
every single chapter begins with a fictional story of a president walking up and saying, I'm sorry, but it's been brought to my attention that UFOs are real. I've shut down Wall Street. There's just going to be panics in the streets. And it's just absurd. Chapter after chapter after chapter, he goes on about how, whether or not aliens are going to be it, we're going to be able to sue the aliens. And it plays out these fantasies. They're just complete and utter.
Wait a minute. Sue the aliens?
Of course. Because the aliens abducted people. And if the United States, if the military knew that they were being abducted and didn't do anything, can we sue them? I mean, there's chapter after, but every chapter has the basic premise that Wall Street has to be shown, that there's going to be horrible panic, that all of it, and that's the entire premise of the book. And I'm like, this book does not have any appreciation for the cynicism of humanity. And for a guy who lost his train of thought, it's coming back to me now. So we had this perfect litmus test to prove my point. On January 28th, a video showed up on YouTube called UFO Over Jerusalem. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes, of course.
It was the perfect example. So in Richard Dolan's book, he's talking about what's going to make disclosure happen. Well, he says flat out, that under no way, shape, or form will disclosure ever come from the military or the people who've conducted the cover-up. There is no benefit for them. They will never do it. They will never disclose. So the only way disclosure will ever happen is if their hand is forced. Well, how might their hand be forced? Well, one scenario their hand might be forced is that there's a major UFO sighting. Lots of people videotape it, and then they'll have to address it. And then he actually says in the book that we can't expect disclosure to come from the UFOs because the UFOs are covering themselves up. The book contradicts itself constantly. It just gives explanation after explanation of why disclosure will never happen. I mean,
well, one of the things I think is the reason that, you know, as far as the military, most of this stuff out there is their technology to begin with. I believe 80-90% of UFO sightings belong to the other, you know, governments, militaries, you know, top secret black ops or whatever. So,
maybe yes, maybe no. I mean, it depends on how you qualify a UFO. If you mean you saw some blinky light in the sky or something, I mean that. But as far as Dolan's book is, in a rational way, he does rationally state over and over again the reasons why disclosure will never happen. The guys flying the UFOs don't want disclosure to happen. The people in the government don't want disclosure to happen. Disclosure is never going to happen. And in the very next sentence, he says, disclosure is definitely going to happen. And when it happens, people are going to freak out. And it is just, it's utterly internally inconsistent and contradictory. And then later on, he goes, I'm certain that disclosure will happen 20 years from now. And his reason for why disclosure is going to happen 20 years from now is because of the singularity. Do you know what the singularity is?
Not completely. Explain it. I've definitely heard of it.
The singularity is the belief. This is a futurist thing. So the singularity is the belief that the day that we create a computer, artificial intelligence, that is smarter than a human being, they call that the singularity. Once we create a computer program that is smarter than humans, then at that point, humans become eclipsed, that we become inferior species.
They just made a robot that plays Jeopardy, right? They've already done that, right?
You know that's a load of crap, right?
What, the robot's Jeopardy thing is?
Yes.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, okay, so you're talking to an expert software engineer here, so let me explain this. Okay, so what the robot on Jeopardy did, the AI on the Jeopardy did, is it pressed a button faster than human beings can do. Let's all act surprised that a computer could press a button. Every single question the computer got right, the person, the human players, also knew the answer. They just couldn't press the button fast enough. And every single question, which was simply looking up data in a database, of course the computer could get it correct. Of course, no problem. Every question which required abstract thought, the computer did not get or got horribly wrong, but the humans got correct. So the way I like to explain, because people don't understand this, I'm in computers. So here's the deal, Jeffrey. Jeffrey, can you add, multiply, and divide 4
yes.
trillion times a second?
No.
Okay, then you're dumber than a computer, because a computer can. So you get my point here, is that's an invalid comparison. You can't compare a computer chip, which can multiply numbers 4 trillion times a second, to a human brain. That's not a valid comparison. That's not an A-B comparison. One is one type of calculation. A human brain is a different thing. So let's not act surprised that someone can write a computer program which can access a database and look up facts and press a button faster than a person. That's not that surprising, and that's also not intelligence. Now let's add to that, do you know how many software engineers wrote the software for the Jeopardy program?
How many?
Hundreds, probably. And every single one of those guys had degrees from MIT and were smarter than me and you put together. So understand that the people on Jeopardy were not playing against the computer. They were playing against the combined intelligence of hundreds of software engineers who programmed that thing. They aren't playing, all a computer could do is add, subtract, multiply, and divide. That's all it can do. They were playing against an incredible complex piece of software written by brilliant people. And those brilliant guys, the MIT guys, encapsulated their knowledge. That's what I do. That's what I do for a living. I'm not as smart as those guys, but I work hard, and I take my knowledge and I encapsulate it. So there's a bit of a thing. If you play chess against a computer, in a sense, you're playing chess against the computer programmer, who was a human being. The human being wrote that software. So no computer wrote that software itself. It was written by a human. So everything you've ever seen in a computer, which appears clever and smart in intelligence, is not a manifestation of the computer. It's a manifestation of the software engineers, brilliant, smart, human software engineers who wrote that. So this whole thing, by the way, I give all credit to those programmers who wrote that Watson program. I mean, I applaud them. What they did was very impressive. But at the end of the day, it says nothing about the intelligence of a computer. It says everything about the intelligence of software engineers at IBM. And the ability of a computer to rapidly access a database and press a button. There was no intelligence. The questions, which required abstract thought, and on top of that, every single question that computer got right, the humans knew it as well. They just couldn't press a button in one bazillion zillionth of a second like the computer could. So I felt like explaining that to people who were, because I do applaud what the engineers did. What they did accomplish is significant, and it was very impressive. But it's kind of like if you have a convincing puppet. If you have this incredibly convincing puppet, people look and they go, look how smart that puppet is. You know, that's the illusion you're trying to create. But you've got to remember that the puppet's not intelligent. It's the person who has their hand inside the puppet that's smart. And that's the situation with Watson. The computer isn't smart. The people who programmed the computer are smart. And do you understand the distinction there?
Gotcha, yes. Like the Japanese have that, they're sending up some robot into space. It's like, it looks like one of those real doll HBO sex dolls that was like on HBO, the real dolls that you can buy and bang and stuff. It's like a high-tech Teddy Ruxpin. They're going to send it to the moon or something, or space station.
Yeah, but don't you know there's alien bases on the moon? Didn't you know that?
Yeah, Nazis are up there. Don't you remember?
Nazis, too. You know what gets me?
You're killing me.
You know what gets me about the alien base on the moon thing?
What?
Do you know that India, the country India, sent a probe to the moon a few years ago, the Chandra Levy, I believe is what it was called, the Chandra probe, right?
Okay.
Do you know that there's almost 1 billion people in the country of India, and their culture is there are people all over India who will do unbelievable feats and unimaginable feats to get even the tiniest bit of fame and recognition. Almost every single Guinness Book of World Records is owned by someone in India. I mean, if there's a record that can be, it's their culture, it's part of their culture. Now, if that's the country you're born and live in, and they set a probe to the moon, I guarantee you that if they saw anything that looked like an alien artifact, they would be screaming it for the rooftops, not covering it up. Someone explain to me why anyone from India would cover up anything of a remarkable discovery on the moon. You can have your NASA conspiracy theories. Okay, I get that, and NASA's airbrushing. Explain to me how NASA kept India quiet. I don't get that argument.
Definitely. It makes sense. I mean, they are very flamboyant, and, you know, you would think if they saw something there that, you know, these other countries would definitely, you know, let everybody know about it.
Why wouldn't you? They would tell everyone. So I hear these stories about NASA airbrushing out alien bases on the moon, and don't get me wrong, they make for entertaining stories, but I don't buy that other countries, other nations wouldn't, you know, give anything to scoop America on a story like that. And I don't think there's anything we could do to keep them shut up about it. Do you really?
Yeah, I mean, they would want the fame and the prestige, and, you know, they would be like, you know, it'd be their big thing, their big to-do.
The only thing I can think of is if we had given them technology to get there and basically, you know, made them sign their children away.
I don't know. I think that would be leaky out the wazoo. I don't think you can keep those guys shut up about it. I think it's too much of their culture to get acclaim and fame. But at any rate, I mean, they make for interesting stories, but I got off on a diversion of the story, which is Richard Dolan's book suggests that once we reach the singularity and computers are self-intelligent, by then disclosure's for sure going to happen. And this is a very odd and strange book. It contradicts itself every other paragraph. It's 100% convinced that we're all going to freak out when the news comes out. It constantly plays out fantasy scenarios of everyone shouting from the rooftops, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so, which is why the book does so well, right? Because everybody who's into UFOs wants to read a book so they can live their fantasy of, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so. And it's very odd and very strange. And when he talks about Zachary Sitchin in, like, the first chapter of the book, I mean, he's already gone off the deep end. Zachary Sitchin is not a respected scholar. He is a goonball and a goofball, and, I mean, it's absurd. So he's shown, demonstrated by the first chapter, that he's lost all ability to filter and filter data in a rational and reasonable way, and he's fallen off that slippery slope. So that was my impression of AD after disclosure. I'd be interested. I'll buy you a copy, Jeffrey. If you'll read it, I'll buy you a copy.
Really? Hey, now.
And hear your opinion. Okay?
I will hold you to that because I am a book gigolo.
I will buy you a copy if you promise to read it and then comment about it. You know, I want to hear your thoughts. Like, okay, Ratcliffe said this, but I read it and I thought it was blank. I want to hear your
opinion. All right, you got my word. I'll do it.
Like me, it goes on and on and on. So one of the points in the book is the point I've made is that now everybody on the world, I mean, literally 2 billion people with cell phones that have cameras and video cameras. So,
hey, John, you know, John.
Yeah.
Hey, John, we need to go to break for 10 minutes.
Sure.
I'm being yelled.
It's break.
So let's break for like 10 minutes, and then we'll regroup.
Okay.
After that, all right?
Yeah, just stay on the phone or don't hang up.
Okay.
You need to put the phone down or something, that's fine, but...
Are you interested in a radio program that focuses on the deeper aspects of the UFO topic? Would you like to explore the facts and truths of what ufology and UFO research are all about?
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Church of Mavis. This is Jack Nicholson. Saturday night. You're out there listening in your car or in the chat room. You're probably out getting smacked up and looking for a little bit of beaver. We're not. We're sitting here doing this show. There's no beaver around, but we got John Ratcliffe because that's what we do. All right, let me stop that because it got really stupid. All right.
Yes, thank you.
Nothing like getting a blowjob from a superior officer. All right, John, you there?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Jack. John, you wanted to get into Paratopia. I'm sorry. What's going on? What's your spin on Paratopia?
All right, before we vector off that, I'll just real quick finish up the thought, which is, this whole Jerusalem UFO thing that people have been following, there's a video that went up that was viral, and the video went up and it showed the UFO, but it was really just a ball of light at night. I don't know how a ball of light at night equates to aliens from outer space, but it kind of went viral, and it went viral because there were allegedly multiple videos made by multiple independent witnesses from different angles. And now that we've probably got 2 billion people on the planet who have cell phones with videos, and now they're getting high def, and, you know, within the next 10 years, we'll probably have 3 billion people on the planet who have high-definition video recorders. So you pretty much have to assume that if UFOs are real and people see them, that the next time some UFO shows up, if we don't get 100 videos from 100 different camera angles, that actually ought to be suspicious. But people got real excited about this Jerusalem UFO, and I thought it was a really interesting
social experiment, how people reacted to it. And they just assumed, you had everybody going, this is the proof. I mean, I had 4 billion posts on my Facebook stream of people going, this is the ultimate proof. And now, if you were in the business of making a fake video to fool people, wouldn't the thing you would do to fool people is make a fake video that was supposedly from multiple camera angles? And the point I wanted to make here is that anything that's uploaded to YouTube, you should just pretty much assume is fake. But
yep.
I don't know how many people, I mean, this is in Richard Duck. I've seen it over and over again. People go, you don't believe in UFOs, just go on to YouTube. I'm like, that's a source for evidence? I don't quite get that. So people, one of the things is, for example, you're part of Crop Circles, right?
Yes.
Yep.
No, I haven't. What's the Crop Circle?
You know, Crop Circles are all fake, right? That there are teams and teams and teams of artists in England who go out and make these designs. They love it. They're incredibly proud of their designs and the artistry, and nothing tickles the British sense of humor more than for people to go on websites and say how they're getting mystical messages from the crop circles that these guys make. And that's an enormous amount of work to go out and make these designs, but they do it.
But aren't some of those, like, they can't be disproven? Some of them are questionable as far as being something else, right? Aren't a few of them, you know, rare?
I don't see that personally. I look at this as one of the top crop circle dudes is Colin Andrews. And Colin Andrews says 90% of them are for 100% sure fake. So if 90% of them are 100% sure fake by these kids who get a kick out of going out there, I don't personally worry a whole lot about the remaining 10%. There's people have a vested desire for them to be mystical and magical, and there's nothing mystical or magical about teenagers going out and making complex. I mean, it's been proven and demonstrated over and over again. There's a mundane explanation. So I don't need to look for an extraordinary explanation because the mundane one is right there in front of our faces. So I'm not trying to deal with the crop circle issue in its entirety. What I'm trying to say is we know for a fact that human beings invest enormous amounts of energy making fake crop circles for their personal amusement. That's a fact, okay?
Yes.
Meanwhile, you know how much work it takes for a teenager with a copy of After Effects Pro to make a fake UFO video and upload it to you? It takes nothing. Do you know how much amusement a teenager gets out of people going on and on about how his video is proof that aliens are visiting? There's no provenance. Provenance means you know where the video came from, you've interviewed the witnesses, you've gotten independent corroboration. So this gets to the heart of Nutter Butter, people who think irrationally.
Well, one thing I wanted to say real quick is with the Jerusalem UFO videos, the All News Web, Michael Cohen, is the root of that spreading like wildfire. Actually, one of the people, Cohen, there's another person that he's related to with the last name Cohen that has UFO video, but he basically, and people like, he has people who support him who are in the field, like Friedman, all kinds of people as sources who have given articles to his site. But basically what he does, he's the source of this Nutter Butter. He's a fat pig from Australia. He makes up stuff. He made up the fact that he made up that a WikiLeaks cable was given to him personally from WikiLeaks, put the article out, and made it seem like he was releasing a WikiLeaks to the entire public, and got busted by it, by a site called Ghost Theory. And basically he's doing the same thing with the Jerusalem stuff. He just makes up stuff, and next thing you know, China sees it, and China's spreading it in Chinese across China.
Dude, China will take articles from The Onion
and you know, post them as real. Listen, these people, they believe 100% with anything. They don't question anything. It's 100% belief. It's just like any religion thing. It's the exact same thing. And the thing with YouTube that drives me nuts is that you have these cases that have just been totally proven to be frauds, like Jonathan Reed and some of these other ones years ago. But they got all this crap out on YouTube, and it's getting recycled again. Now all this stuff is out. All this right. junk that we got rid of years ago, these same people are bringing out, and it's just like it's new.
Right, and that's it's an interesting thing. You heard the phrase, you know, separating signal from noise, and in a one sense, you know, the internet allows us to share information across the world, and in a certain respect, that's a positive thing. But the flip side, it allows us to share bullshit around the world, and equal if not greater proportion. So while it's this positive force, I'm not saying some video on YouTube isn't a real UFO. I'm saying I have no way of knowing. There's no way I can know by virtue of someone uploading something to YouTube. It's simply impossible to know. And I, after that Jerusalem UFO, I've got all these Facebook people, and I started responding to their Facebook posts going, you guys know this is a hoax, right? You know this is a hoax. And they got, I'll finish by starting with a good punchline for this. Their reactions were very, very strange. And as you know, after those first two YouTube videos of the Jerusalem UFO got posted, then another one got posted, which was immediately and clearly and obviously fake, and then another one, and then another one. And very quickly, it was the fifth and the sixth and the seventh. Now, in Richard Dolan's reasoning, this is how we're going to reach disclosure, right? That independent witnesses are going to videos to YouTube. Well, here we had a case in point where something like that supposedly happened. But what happened is we just immediately got noise. Let's say there were a real UFO event. I mean, just hypothetically, somebody actually saw a flying saucer over Chicago and 50 people videoed it and uploaded it to YouTube. Pretty convincing, right? Within 24 hours, there would be 300 fake ones, and it would immediately muddy the water. And that's where Richard Dolan's thesis falls apart, because he acts like this would be world-changing. He underestimates the cynicism of the culture. And in the case of the Jerusalem UFO thing, which, by the way, even if it were real, it was a ball of light, okay? Ball of light, that's cool, but that's all it was a ball of light. So last Saturday, I decided to make a Jerusalem UFO video myself, and I uploaded it to YouTube. I did it in one take. It took me 30 seconds. And for anybody who wants to go check it out, if you guys have a website, you put up a link. But my YouTube account name is jratcliffe63367. And it's called the fifth UFO Jerusalem video. My wife and I made it. It took me 30 seconds to tape it. It took me 1 minute to upload it to YouTube. So that's how long it took me to make a fake UFO video.
How did you How did you do it?
I won't give the punchline. You had to go watch it. And I uploaded it, and it got like 1,100 hits in 24 hours. It acted as a reaction, as I expected people to either go, that was really funny, or for them to go, it was really stupid. Either reaction was fine with me, and that's what I expected. What I didn't expect was the number of people who got furious, angry, unbelievable emotion. I'm like, how can you be this emotional about a 30-second UFO video? And the reason was I was making fun of them, I guess. But I actually had one person post a comment that said, be careful what you do. You are treading on my dreams. So a 30-second UFO video is treading on his dreams. These people,
did anyone believe it? That was real?
No. The punchline is I made as fake a UFO video as I humanly could make.
and made it as fake as absolutely possible as a joke. And most people got the joke. They either thought the joke was funny or they thought it was kind of stupid, but I couldn't believe how many people got angry. It was the anger which just shocked me. That I can understand you going, that was really stupid. That's fine. But to be angry about it?
Was it so stupid it was funny?
That was my intent. I was trying to make it so stupid it was funny. And people got angry about it. And it really showed the whole Jerusalem UFO thing really showed that that we just can't – we've reached a point where I'm at a point where I think if a UFO landed on the White House lawn, Obama came out, greeted aliens, and shook their hand, 24 hours later, no one would believe it. I mean, we have people who don't believe we landed men on the moon. Okay, like a significant percentage of the population doesn't believe that. People are at a point now where belief is now it doesn't have anything to do with facts or reason. It has to do with personal opinion and emotions.
Hey, it would be – I already got what it would be. It would be special ops doing an exercise to make it seem like alien beings have come here to cause fear, to cause New World Order. That would be it.
No, exactly. So for Richard Dolan, and I'm going to keep heaping on him, for him to write a book and go, the very next day, Wall Street would be shut down. People would be – it's like, no, dude, that's not what would happen. What would happen is some people would believe it, some people wouldn't believe it, lots of people wouldn't care, and life would go on as if nothing particular had happened. And that's where the entire premise of AD after disclosure is a load of crap. Because that's not what would – the whole premise of the book is it would change the world. And I am fairly convinced it wouldn't make much of a difference. Would you guys agree with me or –
I know there's been many events in UFOs that have – it's happened like that. I mean, there's things that have happened just like that. Something big would happen, and then, like, you know, for instance, the Kepler just found a bunch of Earth-like planets or whatever. It was like a – it looked like a space renaissance. The next thing you know, there the government's putting out, you know, an agency to govern space. They actually said in an article it's to regulate space debris and to you know, deflect hostile forces. And, you know, there was this whole big, you know, when that Kepler thing happened a few weeks ago or whenever they discovered all these planets, there was a huge space thing that happened with the government and, you know, NASA shut down, but Bigelow was moving inflatable space habitats to Florida. But, you know, it's like it gets released and then no one cares. They go back to eating their Cheetos or whatever, and that's it.
Well, in particular, he said one possible disclosure event would be some major, well-respected figure making an announcement. And I thought, well, how ironic, because Gordon Cooper and Edgar Mitchell both have made major public announcements. Edgar Mitchell walked on the moon, and he stated as clear as rain as day, UFOs are real, Roswell was an actual crash, and... what has it resulted? Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
In a way, that is disclosure, isn't it? A NASA astronaut saying that? That is disclosure right there. People just go about their business. No one, you know.
Leslie Keene came out with a book this year, and her book is general after general after general saying UFOs are real, UFOs are real, UFOs are real. And last I checked, they didn't shut Wall Street down. People aren't running in panic in the streets. So the entire premise of his book is flawed. The premise is, after disclosure, the entire world changes, nothing's ever going to be the same. And we've had disclosure. We've had it again and again and again. If you look at the amount of evidence for UFOs that we've accumulated over the years, we got it. Some people believe it. Some people don't. Some people care. Some people don't. Life goes on.
And well, I think as long as it's UFO-related, just sightings and UFOs, it's going to be like that. But if it was like, you know, that movie Alien Nation where they come and they start, you know, living with us, then maybe, you know, it'll be a little different. Like Alien
Nation. as long as we're still on top of the food chain, nobody's going to care.
Right.
It's the minute something
the president walks out and says, you know, Big Brother's here, and it's all official-like, there's going to be some problems.
Right. But that's,
I think there's going to be some problems.
Right, but that's right, and I agree 100%. The only way we will have the kind of scenario that his book depicts is if we have a District 9-type event or a V event. Until UFOs are hovering over every major city in the world and announcing on their loudspeakers, unless it's that, ain't going to change anything. And in Richard Dolan's book, he says, that's never going to happen. So the book contradicts itself in that respect. But I agree, it's going to have to be something that major of that order, and I don't see that likely happening in my lifetime. I'm not particularly concerned about it. So it's just going to be the same old, same old. And now we're in this territory where there are so many nutter butters. The web is filled with so many people who've lost capacity for rational thought that now it's like, it's, you know, I mean, I used to be interested in UFOs when you felt like you could get a handle on it, but now there's so much noise and no signal left that I don't know if there's anything left to hold on to.
Yeah, you know,
I mean,
YouTube, you know.
UFO. I'm like, at least Jeffrey saw a UFO. I mean, that's personal validation, you know. You know there's something going on, and it's impacted your life, and I have enough respect to say I don't question that. That's something that happened to you, and I don't.
And I'm not saying it was ET, you know, with a glowing finger either. It could have been, you know, something governmental as well. So.
And people are burnt out on all the hoaxes. That's why nobody believes anything anymore. I mean, it's like everybody just yawns or whatever because you go on YouTube. There's thousands of videos. Every single one of them's fake. I literally do not believe. Yeah, I literally do not believe any pictures or video. Now,
well,
I don't believe any of it.
What I find interesting is, again, why can't people think rational? When the Jerusalem UFO video went up, people went and started investigating the video, which is, you know, that's fine. That's the data you have. But that's the wrong question. The real question is, who filmed this? What are their names? Has a researcher interviewed them? You know, those are the questions. And we don't know who filmed that. We haven't spoken to them. No one's interviewed them. And I understand we're not going to get those answers in 10 minutes, but, you know, let's do the research. Let the research happen. Let us find out the answers. So.
Exactly. And everybody's jaded about this. It's involved in UFOs. Just jaded. That's the best word.
Well, the first video was kind of interesting because of all the background people. I mean, the first video, if it's fake, they went through and they did a lot of like prep. I mean, they got their mom and dad and somebody from Arkansas and some other people, and they had a little script of stuff they're talking about. You know what I mean? It wasn't just.
Are you talking about the one with American voices or the one with Israeli voices?
No, the Israeli's fake. The one with the well, they're probably all fake, but the first one with the American voices.
No, the one with the American voices is so obviously fake, it's crazy. The one with the voices was the first one. The one with American voices where somebody goes, yeah, we got UFOs like that in Mississippi. That one was
yeah. That's what I mean. They got a whole bunch of people together to fake it.
They just edited that. You know, that was a static photograph in the background, right? That they're just filming
was
off
it?
Of a. Yes, that's been proven. Like, no, that's the one I was making fun of in my video. That one's so obviously fake. No, the one that was the first original video was supposedly these Israelis were out in their car. They've actually released a video of him showing them in their car because it was a long piece of video segment. They were in their car. They pulled over, and two of the people in the car both filmed it, and that was uploaded, and they're speaking in, you know, Hebrew or whatever, you know, Israeli, and you know, we can't understand it because we don't speak the language. That was the initial video. That was the initial video.
I don't think I've seen that one. I've never seen that one.
That's the main video. That's the one that flashes. Before the UFO shoots off of the air, it generates a giant flash that illuminates the city. Have you seen that one?
No.
Okay, well, that's the main one. That's the one that, who knows, for all I know, it could be real. I don't know. We got to interview those people and find out if it's, you know, what's the story behind it. But no, the ones with the people speaking in English, that's like, that's crazy fake. That's somebody making a joke. That's totally fake. But
all right, well, are you ready to get into the Emma Woods topic?
Yeah, I think it's worth bringing up. I don't know if it's, well, it is nutter butter in the sense that David Jacobs is nutter butter, and Bud Hopkins is a little nutter butter.
Let me just say one thing before you start. Is the reason the Emma Woods thing has gone nutter butter on so much of a level now is they're obsessed with it. It's like all they talk about. It's become boring. And also the thing is that's wrong about it, possibly Jacobs, you know, apparently, you know, might have mistreated someone, or he did. But the thing that's so messed up about it now is they're like, well, Jacobs did this with hypnotherapy and this bad thing happened, so now hypnotherapy completely, no matter what, is just horrible. We're against it. So they've started this anti-hypnotherapy crusade based on one dude that, you know, mistreated people. That's not right on many levels. That's nutter butter to me. But what is your view on it?
Oh, sorry, Jeffrey. I agree with them. I mean, hypnosis is not... has been shown scientifically to be not appropriate. Well, the only thing hypnosis is proven to be useful for is behavior modification. Like if you want to quit smoking, hypnosis is useful for things like that, but it is not useful for memory retrieval. And that is what, I mean, let's take a step back and stop talking about opinions and personalities and look at the science. And the science is that hypnosis has no value for memory retrieval. And that's been shown scientifically. And this isn't news. This is not news. This is something we learned in 2010 or 2009. This has been known for decades. Do you remember back in the 80s, satanic ritual abuse, and every other person was saying they were abused as being abused by Satanists? They had
all those lives got ruined.
All those lives got ruined. They had 22-year-old girls go to a hypnotist. The hypnotist hypnotized them, and in the hypnosis session, they remembered that they had been satanically abused, and they took their parents to court, and none of it was true. Those memories, when you're under hypnosis, the process. Memory is a really a flexible thing. I mean, some people have good memories, some people have bad memories. I'm one of the persons who has bad memories. My memories are very poor, so none of this is surprising to me. But memory is very malleable. It can be shaped and changed. One of the features of memory is that you can be 1,000,000% convinced something is true when in fact it's not. And again, this isn't opinion. This has been proven scientifically. There are published research over and over again. Hypnotically retrieved memories are not admissible in any court anywhere on the planet Earth. It is not admissible evidence. And worse, when you go and you hypnotize someone, you actually implant false memories. So, sorry to disagree with you, Jeffrey, but they're correct in this. This is correct.
Well, what I'm saying is I know there are positive stories of people using hypnotherapy and they've benefited from it as far as in the UFO situation or any, you know, many other situations. I mean, there's definitely positive stories out there that people have had happen or breakthroughs with using it, and it's just, I don't think it's right to say the whole thing is just bad when there's still some positive things that have happened from it, regardless. But yeah, to each their own with that. I mean, definitely.
I disagree with you. Is that here's my problem. So let's get back to brass tacks. Here's my problem. Bud Hopkins is an artist. David Jacobs is a historian. Neither of them are a psychotherapist. And we can have a dialogue about hypnosis, yes, hypnosis, no. That's fine. Leave that to the professionals. But in no circumstances should an artist or a historian screwing with people's heads and then have the gall to call what they're doing scientific. Okay? It's just wrong. It's just wrong in every sense of the word. And sorry to say, I'm actually on Paratopia's side in this pretty much 100%. The only thing where I kind of agree with you is John Mack had the credentials. John Mack was an esteemed Harvard psychiatrist. He had every credential that you could want. John Mack did, according to his – I've read both of John Mack's books. I think half these people don't even read the books. I think they talk out their ass because of something they heard from somebody. But I read a lot, and I actually read all of their books. I've read both of John Mack's books. And one of the things that's interesting is John Mack, according to his books, did not use hypnosis. He used relaxation techniques. He put people through therapy sessions. Those therapy sessions, he claimed, helped them and improved their lives, helped them integrate the experiences in their lives, and helped them cope with them. So I'm agreeing with you in that regard, Jeffrey, that people have gone, and I'm sure there's people who've gone to David Jacobs and Bud Hopkins, and at the end of the day go, you know what, that helped me. Because they're nice guys, or they meant well, they were well-meaning, but it was a mistake for them to go and take a deeply traumatic and go see an artist or a historian when they should have gotten help from a professional. I don't understand how Hopkins or Jacobs could be doing what they're doing. It is wrong in every – if you've got a degree in psychiatry and maybe you're one of those psychiatrists who's like, you know, a little out there, then I'll cut you slack. But Hopkins does not have a degree in psychiatry. He is not a licensed therapist, and most certainly is not Jacobs. And by the way, if you've listened to Emma Wood's tapes, the stuff Jacob said on there is obscene. He was going to give Emma, send Emma a chastity belt from the sex shop that he frequents. I mean, it's on the tapes, black and white.
There's no doubt in my mind that was a messed up situation. I mean, that seems like some putting chicks under so you can finger them while you're hypnotizing them or something. You know, there's some weird stuff going on there. I'm not going to deny that.
What's funny about this debate is people are trying to go, he said, she said, and, oh, Carol Rainey said this, and so-and-so said that, and, oh, he said, and I'm going, you're an artist? And you're a historian. End of story. You're not a licensed psychotherapist. You're in the wrong. We don't have to have any discussion beyond that, period. I know Hopkins means well. Nice guy. Sorry, artists should not be dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder. Let's reckon these experiencers, some of them, and this is what Mack said. John Mack said that it doesn't matter what the reality is behind what's happened to these people. They exhibit the symptoms of someone with post-traumatic stress disorder, and these therapies help them. And this is where I disagree with Paratopia. I think they're right 100% on hypnosis. I think they're right 100% on Hopkins and Jacobs. But I don't think they're right on throwing all of the work of qualified professional psychiatrists like John Mack, and he was not the only one. He held the peer group meeting at MIT where he had many people who were there who were professionally qualified. So that's my problem, is I get it. I mean, Hopkins and Jacobs, absurd, that's ridiculous. But
the work that Mac did, the work that other professionals have done. And
well, that's what I was saying. Yeah, I mean, that's right.
But let's stick to the professionals. And the thing is, Mac. This is what we need to remember: is John Mac, even though he was a professional, he didn't use hypnosis. Guess what? The experiencers he dealt with, they all had these shared narratives of these little gray aliens. In other words, the general theme, the general thematic was the same. So we still have the phenomena. The phenomena didn't go away. People are having powerful experiences of interactions with non-human intelligences that deeply impact their lives. And these people are disturbed by it, and they need help. And I think that's where we ought to keep the focus, is how to help these people and admit that some percentage of those people felt helped by Hopkins and Jacobs. And that was a shame. It's a shame that they felt they had to go to an artist or a historian to get help. That was a mistake. And if the psychiatric
she went to Temple University, and
well,
David Jacobs was there, and he misrepresented himself, essentially.
Well, no, that's actually not
my understanding.
No, I've exchanged emails and with Emma and heard a fair amount of her story, but the situation was, and I do think she's, by the way, I do think she's obsessed to kind of an extreme degree with this. I don't know that that's a fact. I don't know that I'm saying that in a critical way. I didn't have happen to me what happened to her, so I don't know, you know, I don't know it happened to her, and if she's going to be obsessed by it, so be it. Maybe she feels harmed and all that, but she was already seeing her therapist, a regular therapist, and the therapist felt he reached the limit of what he could help her with and knew about Jacobs, because Jacobs, of course, is this big name, and referred or sort of suggested that she contact him, and she did contact him, and it led on from there. I mean, the whole ridiculous of this is, why is a historian dealing with what's effectively post-traumatic stress disorder? Now, you could make the argument that if you are being abducted by aliens and you go see a conventional psychiatrist, the psychiatrist is going to say you're crazy and put you on lithium and so forth, right? But that's not the way psychiatry works. That's not how they work. I mean, they don't make those kinds of judgments. They don't care about the reality of what, if you come into a psychiatrist and you say, the government's out to get me and they've got implants in my brain, the psychiatrist doesn't care whether that's true or not. That's not relevant to them. What's relevant to them is how this is affecting your life and how they can make you deal with it and cope with it better. So this idea that people have that if I think I've been abducted by aliens, the psychiatrist is going to tell me I'm nuts, that's not actually how it works. So I think that where the psychiatric community is falling short, people, they need to step up. And John Mack, by the way, is fighting that fight. He fought the good fight, and it is a shame that he passed away so young, and he wasn't that young, but it's a shame that he's gone, because he was, if John Mack were alive today, I think he'd be on the good side of the fight, because I think he was on the good side of the fight to begin with, and he's not here today to defend himself. So I do feel in a sense that the reaction to this historian-artist thing, which is deserved, mind you, it's a long, long time coming, isn't fully addressing. And I keep hearing people talk about the research, the research, the research. Who gives a crap about the research? There's no research here. There's people who are either in pain or they're not. And if they're in pain and they need help, we need to get them help. But the reality is for every one person who's tortured by their alien abductions, there's five times as many of them. Correct me if you think I'm wrong. I think there's five times as many of them who go, yeah, something weird happened to me, but I don't know. I don't think about it. Am I right in that? I think there's, for every one person who's disturbed by this, five times as many go, yeah, I had something weird happen to me once. That really bothered me.
Always, when I talk to people who've had alien, who claim alien abduction experiences, and I'm always uncomfortable with the word abduction, I always ask them, I go, well, were you, not everyone, but I've asked, were you physically there? Like, did it happen in a dream state, or were you physically there? And they always seem to have a problem on some level answering that question. So that's my big thing with it. I mean, I think these things can happen, but I think they can also happen in a dream state. Like, I think our astral bodies on some level may interact with these beings, and maybe our fears start to manifest, and it seems like we're being, you know, kidnapped, like, you know, Patty Hearst or something. But there's definitely many layers to it.
Well, Jeffrey, I think you're absolutely right. And Mac, in all of his books, I mean, at the end of the day, if you start talking about alien abductions and you start using what he liked to use, is I love this terminology, is he didn't use the word spiritual, but it's really what he meant. He called it transpersonal experience. But let's say spiritual. People are having these experiences that are in a frame of consciousness, which is non-normal consciousness. That they're having an experience, no doubt, but it is not. Meanwhile, you've got people like Mac, and I can't speak entirely for Hopkins, but Jacobs. Jacobs acts like this stuff's all literally happening. Like, these people are getting dragged out of their bedroom by UFOs every other week. Babies are getting their uterus. That's not happening. There's no evidence for it. There's no evidence for that occurring at some physical, objective level. We have no evidence for it. All you've got is people who have had traumatic experiences with, and what I like to explain to people is this. Have you ever had, and I think everybody can relate to this, have you ever had a dream that was so convincing that when you woke up, you were confused for a bit because you were like, you thought the dream was real, and you actually had this crazy disconnect when you woke up?
Definitely.
Yeah, I've had that many times.
Okay, so that's a normal human experience, to be in a state of consciousness that is so convincingly real. So we know that without anything exceptional, that's part of normal human experience. Now, you take people who are having these extraordinary experiences. The human brain is a giant chemical factory. So now let's take the other extreme. Do you believe that you could take a drug, and that under the influence of that drug, you could have visions and visionary experiences so convincingly real that they could fill you with fear, and whether you've, you know, taken drugs or not, you could probably imagine, yeah, that's probably the case, right? So now we take one step further. We go, do you think there are some people, some percentage of the population, who are capable of having experiences that are as profound as dropping acid without them actually having taken acid? And I would say, yes. And we call those people alien abductees. And to them, they're having an experience which is, you know, it's hitting their sense impressions as real as rain. I mean, they're having powerful, profound experiences that affect them at a deep level, and we should respect that. Does that say anything about some objective reality? No, it doesn't. It doesn't mean it's not important to them. So I think John Mack really was using the right language in talking about this, and we lost his voice, and we need to find someone to take his place and speak intelligently and compassionately on these subjects to help these people. And Jeff and Jeremy are fighting a good fight, and maybe sometimes you have to be that extreme to kind of counteract the extreme eye. But I hope we don't lose sight of the compassion along the way. That's kind of the point I wanted to make.
I wanted to, a candidate for Nutter Butter that I've had to deal with lately are the Burns. I like the Burns, but one thing that they've done is they did their radio show, Dream Theater, and their magazine, UFO Magazine, I had money at one point, like last year, and I want to subscribe to UFO Magazine so bad. I always want, you know, a big subscription to it, so I finally did. I subscribed for 2 years. It was like $100 or something. And I've only gotten 3 issues of their magazine since I've subscribed. They stopped doing their magazine practically almost. They're dripping out an issue like every 5 months now. I wrote them and explained, you know, I told them how I felt. They totally ignored me. Just their business sense is completely Nutter Butter with this magazine. All these people have paid for their magazine, and they just, like, put their magazine on hold and moved it away like they could give a flying shit.
You know what I have to say about that, Jeffrey?
What's that?
You completely agree.
Exactly. Nutter Butter Award for UFO Magazine. Hate to say it. Wish I never had to say it, but Nutter Butter Award for new UFO Magazine.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've had the same experience.
Well, William, I like him. I like Bill. I think he's a really cool guy, but he's one of those guys, man, that just, oh, yeah, that's alien. It's a UFO. I mean, without even, you know, without even doing any research or anything, I mean, he just right there, you know,
he's
that's a UFO. Or...
I like him too, but he's definitely a little out there. But yeah, what they've done business-wise with that magazine right now is just, they've just flushed it. It's just, they've completely smacked the customer right in the face and just said, hey, we don't care if you gave us all this money. We're going to do whatever we want. Screw you. And that's what they've done.
I agree completely. I don't think they're rolling in dough over any of it. It's an enormous amount of work, but I agree it's definitely in bad form for them to take all those subscriptions and then not deliver. I think they owe people either refunds or an explanation, but I did exactly the same thing, and I had exactly the same result because we're, you know, it's not like some people are getting their magazines and some aren't. And the magazine, to be quite frank, isn't that good. It's filled with a bunch of new age wackos saying nonsense.
Yep.
And it's not like it's even that particularly good. I just kind of wanted to support it in the sense that, hey, there's this one UFO magazine. But, you know, at the end of the day, as I said, I got interested in this sort of intellectually. There hasn't been much intellectual stimulation in UFOs for a long time. So then I get interested in it from the sociological perspective of following sort of the crazies. And that continues to remain entertaining for me. But I think everybody needs to have a reality check and just constantly remind themselves that this stuff does not really matter. In decades upon decades upon decades, none of it has really mattered. It's never affected anybody's life. You know, I'm like, alien abductees have to go get hypnotized to even remember what happened. You ever think maybe better well enough left alone? If the aliens were nice enough to wipe your memory, don't go trying to remember it. You know, it's like they're trying very hard to keep a low profile, so they're just not affecting our lives very much.
Well,
I don't think anybody's lives are very affected by it at the end of the day.
Well, that's like with that's like with the probe situation. If advanced beings come all the way here from, you know, wherever, light years away, and they stick a probe up your butt, it's probably for a good reason. You know, it's probably to check you medically or something. You know, it's probably for a good reason that these beings from, you know, that are thousands of years older than us came here. I doubt they're sticking something up your butt for arousal. It's probably to check your guts, your prostate or something.
Yeah. A lot of times I don't think people even, this is a moving off on a different topic, but I don't think people think weirdly enough about UFOs. How much time do we have left?
Not long.
We got about 4 minutes.
4 minutes.
Well, then I'll do this really, really short. I don't think people think weird enough about UFOs. What I'm getting at is we try to project and we imagine, you know, what advanced technology might be 20 years in the future or 100 years in the future. But no one does, nor do I think they can, even come close to imagining what a technology 1 million, 100 million, 1 billion years advanced from us might look like. And we can. I mean, we can't even begin to comprehend that. But there's a few things we can extrapolate, and those are nanotechnology, genetic engineering, and artificial intelligence. And a million years advanced technology, let's assume we've completely mastered those three things, then it's not as spaceships coming from across the universe. We already send robotic probes to nearby planets. What some sufficiently advanced technology would send, they wouldn't send spaceships. They'd send seeds. They could send microscopic seeds that could populate the entire universe. And whenever they arrived at some place that was a place that would support that seed, from that seed, they could have all of what was needed to perform genetic engineering. They can basically manufacture and grow any technology imaginable. This is all, I mean, super advanced robotics and artificial intelligence and genetic engineering, you know, beyond what we can even begin to fathom. So I just don't think we think weirdly enough or how advanced. So I love how everybody tries to say what is or isn't possible based on what we can imagine might be true 20 years from now. I don't think we're thinking nearly strangely enough. And that's
people don't even look up in the sky anymore.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I mean, you hear a lot of guys go, well, maybe it's interdimensional and da-da-da-da-da, and that's great. It could be interdimensional or something crazy like that. But even just in ordinary space-time, if you just project out AI, genetic engineering, and nanotech far enough into the future, that's some unbelievable stuff. I mean, basically, with a sufficiently advanced of those technologies, they could arrive on a planet and grow anything. They could just create it. They could just grow from that software intelligence could grow creatures, and you've heard the idea that like the Greys are maybe like genetically created artificial beings. I think that's probably getting the right area of conjecture. That they didn't fly here. No, they were grown here. They were grown like you would grow a corn plant. I think they're starting to. I'm not saying that's what any of it is. I'm saying that's how crazy or how out there you need to start your thinking, you know?
It makes sense, definitely.
All right, guys.
Well, I felt
John, you went
with a whole rambling crap, so there you go.
You did, man. We just talked shit about people for 2 hours.
It's good to have a skeptic on. I think people are too hard on skeptics. It's good to hear that, you know, they have this hatred for skeptics and ufology. It's good to hear that perspective because many times skeptics are right on many subjects. Not to say they're right on everything, but there's a lot to learn from the skeptical side.
Well, I'm a skeptic who believes in UFOs, so that makes me a rare bird.
Well, we appreciate it.
All right, John, you got anything you want to shill real quick?
No, but I'd encourage people to go watch my UFO video. Put a link on there and see if they laugh or get mad at me.
I did.
And,
it's brilliant, and I already shared it.
John is our special Nutter Butter investigative reporter for the Church of Mavis. So thanks for doing the show. We appreciate it, and we'll definitely have you on again. And I'm gonna, as soon as I'm done with the show, I'm gonna hit you up for that free book.
Give me your address, and I'll pop it in the mail.
Nice. Hey, nice. All right, I will. I'll send you an email about that. But thank you for being on the show, John. Pleasure.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.